It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Jim Dalrymple joins us along with Andy Iannocco and Renee Ritchie. Apple loses in the Supreme Court, but it doesn't mean what you think it means. Apple Pay now supports NFC and those little stickers. Is that secure? And watch out. Here comes the zombie load. It's all next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 661, recorded Tuesday, May 14th, 2019. Our frozen flooding Canadian future. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging. There's one place you can go where hiring is simple and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter, where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. And by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at WordPress.com. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/MacBreak. And by LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Just remember your master password, and LastPass remembers the rest. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news, of which there is a dearth today, but that's okay because we're going to have a good time because Jim Dalrymple is here from The Loop, loopinsight.com. Hello, Jimmy.
Hey.
Good to see you.
How you doing?
I'm well. How's life in Loop land?
Life is good.
Good. We always like having Jim on. Also joining us, as always, from Boston Public Radio, WGBH in Boston, Mr. Andrew Iannocco. Hello, Andy.
Hello. I don't think I've ever heard like Jim referred to as Jimmy. That's like almost a mind blower.
I almost ducked when I said it.
No.
It came out of my mouth and I went like, don't hit me.
It sounds like my mother calling me.
Jimmy, time for dinner.
Or if I'm in trouble, it's just James.
James.
Then I knew I was in trouble.
Yeah. James, come here. We have to talk. But on your way, pick a switch from the bush. Also with us, Renee Ritchie, who is celebrating 18 weeks of nonstop snow.
No, it's the floods now, Leo. The snow's all gone away, but the floods remain. We're still on state of emergency. Dun, 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 dun.
Up in Montreal.
You can call me Jim. You can call me Jimbo. You can call me Jimmy. I mean, any of those things are fine.
It doesn't have to call me Renee.
No.
So Apple loses in the Supreme Court, but as everybody was quick to point out, it doesn't really mean a thing.
Well, it was interesting because... Go ahead, Andy. Sorry.
I'll just say, well, it just means that instead of... It means that a lawsuit that could possibly change how they do business gets to go forward. If it's 10 steps to Apple having to totally change all of their App Store policies, we are now on step 2, maybe 3. But that is arguably two numbers greater than one.
It was kind of a firewall. Apple was hoping they could get rid of the whole threat of a class action lawsuit over the Apple Store's monopoly by just saying, well, customers of the Apple Store don't have standing. They can't sue us, according to Illinois Brick.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think, Ben Thompson had a really good analysis on this, which he is wont to do. But this to me is sort of like maybe one of the best things that could have happened to Apple. And I say that only because that law was supposed to prevent dual plaintiffs from getting damages based on the same lawsuit. So in this case, it was meant to prevent developers from suing Apple and customers from suing Apple both for the same thing. And the U.S. has traditionally looked at lowest price as the key for regulation, where the EU looks at things like competition regardless of price. And in this case, the thesis is that because of Apple's control of the App Store, app prices are artificially high, which whenever you say that, I just imagine every developer in the world screaming and crying because if anything, Apple's been accused of absolutely destroying the value of applications. But what this means is that it doesn't have anything to do with the merits of the case. It just means that the people involved, the customers involved, can sue Apple, but they still have a terrible case. There's a case maybe that developers can sue Apple, and there's a case that can be made about antitrust that has nothing to do with this. This looks like the worst possible antitrust case from Apple is now allowed to go forward based on a bad reading of an existing law that's designed to prevent just that, which is sort of the ultimate irony at the same time.
So just to be clear, the Supreme Court did not rule whether the App Store is a monopoly.
Yes.
There are no consequences, no damages to Apple. It just means that a lawsuit about that can go forward. And Apple has ample time, A, to defend that lawsuit, which probably will take years, and B, to, if it wants to, and I think this is what Ben Beharin said, there are lots of little changes they could make to the App Store that would make the whole thing moot.
But are they pricing based? Like, the whole thing for me about that makes this one silly is that it's based on the price of apps being too high when the price of apps is still trending towards zero. A lot of anti-competitive arguments, but pricing is a weird one.
Pricing is the silliest argument of all in this whole thing, because let's say that a good portion of the apps are either free, which Apple takes no cut of, obviously there's no money to take a cut of, or they're 99 cents. So how is it that pricing is an issue here when apps cost 99 cents? I mean, I wrote yesterday that I don't think as consumers, we value the work that developers put into creating these apps. The customers these days value free and complain that 99 cents is too much, even if they find the app useful. And that to me is just craziness. I mean, from what I've seen over the years, and I've been doing this for 25, 26 years now, the price of apps is ridiculously low. So for somebody to say that Apple has a monopoly based on that is just ridiculous.
Yeah, but it still leaves them open to the idea that there is no way to sell an app there's no way to sell an app to iPhone users without giving Apple 30%. There is also, particularly in the EU, where it's not the users who are filing a class action suit, but the EU that is actually applying antitrust laws against Apple, saying that it's not correct for Apple to be selling a music service through their app store, but giving themselves better terms than they're giving Spotify or any other services that are sold through the app store. So this is there's still a lot, although everybody's very correct in saying that it's odd for users to file this suit as opposed to the actual aggrieved parties, i.e. the developers and the makers of competing services that compete with Apple to bring the suit. It still reveals a big vulnerability for Apple. This is something that they probably in the next 3 to 5 years, they're going to have to they're probably going to have to proactively make an adjustment to how they deal with parts of their business just to make these lawsuits much, much harder to prosecute, if nothing else.
Yeah, and if people want to download apps from other sources, so from anywhere on the internet, what's going to happen is that there's going to be malicious apps and malicious code installed on phones that allows them to be hacked. Because what Apple does with the App Store is not just have a platform, but it's a safe and secure platform. So if you can go download apps from anywhere, which people will do, they're going to come back and, you know, the headline is going to read, not the headline won't read, some stupid person downloaded an app from an insecure website, which, you know, put a virus on their phone and they get hacked. The headline will read iPhone hacked. That's it. And then the EU will be screaming at Apple to protect its users, and people will be screaming to put software in place so that I don't get my phone hacked.
Well, what if Apple does what Android does, which is allow users to check a box that says I'm going to get stuff, sideload stuff from third parties. I know I'm taking a risk. Google puts a big warning of the risks involved. And in fact, lately they've made it so that the Switch is a one-time only. You switch it, download it, and it switches, reverts back to the Play Store. What if they did something like that? I don't think that the Google environment, despite all the press, is significantly more risky than the Apple environment. Wouldn't that be a suitable way to get out of this?
I don't think so. I think that what will end up happening is that people will just scream at Apple. I mean, that's what's going to come out of it. People, I think, expect in Android and some of the other operating systems for different devices that, you know, viruses and malware are a thing. With Apple, they don't. They figure that they're secure. They're secure because of the way that Apple distributes things. And, you know, they hold the developers to a certain standard of what the apps have to be.
Malware still leaks through. I honestly don't think that I feel any less secure using Android than I do Apple. And malware leaks through in both cases. Both companies take great steps to protect you.
I don't think that Google takes great steps to protect privacy and security. They take
privacy,
great steps
maybe not.
The security absolution as they can.
They absolutely do. I would reply by saying, come on. They do app screening. They do proactive. They proactively screen apps that go in. The number of apps that have malware that come through the Play Store is minuscule compared to the perceived advantage of being able to sideload apps as your own priority. But the one thing we haven't spoken about is that if Apple were to allow non-App Store apps to be installed, the other problem is going to be piracy of commercial apps, which is another very, very big problem. But my position is that I do think that this is my phone. I've spent $1,000 for this phone. If I perceive a benefit to be able to sideload an app that is not on the App Store, that violates iTunes Store app policies, that should be my prerogative. I think that they have a responsibility to warn me that this might be a bad idea, particularly if I'm going to be getting this app from someone I don't know and can't really trust. But that really is my priority. The other thing is that this really is an issue. That if Apple has the ability to sell services through iOS apps, if Apple has the ability to break its own rules for developers, again, there are many, many benefits to users, but that also arguably creates a burden on the people that Apple is competing with through the App Store. So this is something that needs to be discussed and really needs to be settled out in the open rather than Apple being able to claim this by fiat.
Be fair to Apple, and then Renee, you'll be next, but I should give you what Apple said in response to CNBC. I just had it in front of me and I've lost it again. Essentially, I want to read it exactly. Today's decision means plaintiffs can proceed with their case in district court. We are confident we will prevail when the facts are presented. The App Store is not a monopoly by any metric. So we've already said that this just merely means that the lawsuit can go ahead. It does not end the lawsuit prematurely, which is what Apple hoped.
Yeah.
Apple says we're not a monopoly. So is it that you can't buy stuff from anywhere besides the App Store? Because that's one remedy we're talking about. But are there other remedies? What if Apple didn't charge Netflix? One of the complaints is Netflix and Amazon and others don't like that Netflix says we're not going to allow people to renew
companies
their Netflix subscription.
Companies that are intermediaries. Like there's a couple of things here. And one is that in this specific, there are a lot of antitrust arguments or regulation arguments you can make against the App Store. This case just happens to not be a good one. I think just on the law, it was a bad case. The biggest problem with things like Netflix and Spotify is that They and Apple are both trying to do the same thing. Netflix and Spotify are trying to aggregate other people's content and sell it to you for a profit. Whereas Apple is trying to aggregate their, like they're aggregating music or TV. Apple is aggregating apps and trying to sell it at a margin.
And
there's no room for two margins there. You can't have two middlemen.
Right.
And that creates inevitable tension because Apple can't take 30% and Netflix takes 30% and Spotify takes 30%. There's just not enough percent. It's just a math thing. I think Apple has to be incredibly careful because there are so many potential landmines that they could step on, especially in the EU. They are vulnerable in the US, like we saw with Amazon and books, where really lowest, like you can completely price drop everything and sell it for no money as a loss leader, and the regulators will tend to love you rather than thinking that you're destroying any and all viable market for that material. So there are landmines on both sides there. This case just happens to be a very bad one, and I think anything can happen at trial. You know, it's one of those situations where you can never go in predicting it. But on the law, this seems to be one of the more solid arguments for Apple. So I don't think there'll be any immediate damage from this. There's just the potential for problems outside of it. And it reminds me when you go back, because I always do this, whenever something happens, I go back to previous years and I read and I read and I read. And you look at the announcement of the App Store and how many developers were absolutely thrilled that it was only 30% because everyone else had always taken like 55% from them or charged them so much for everything that it ended up being an exorbitant amount. And 30% was just so low for them. And free apps, they charged you nothing for, no hosting, no transaction, no nothing. And there is going to be a problem for Apple if they lose that 30% because so much of that services revenue, which they're claiming they're going to double in a short amount of time, is based on App Store. But also they subsidize everything that's free in the App Store based on the amount of revenue they're pulling in. Not that it's not obscenely profitable, it is, but there would have to be a profound change to the way the App Store works if any of these elements starts moving around.
Is there an economic pressure on Apple as well, besides this, you know, lawsuit, an economic pressure on Apple? We know that smartphone sales are plummeting, the worst quarter in a long time last quarter, not just for Apple, but for all smartphone sales.
Keep services revenue up.
Well, but at the same time, you also want to keep developers writing for your platform. You want to incentivize. I mean, as you point out, Apple's selling with an iPhone, besides the hardware, is the content.
It's still the most profitable user base and developers want to sell into. They convert better than any other platform still. And that's where a lot of money is for developers. There are certain developers
those
to do
service,
well.
That service revenue comes from selling content.
Subscriptions, in-app purchases, all
created
of that.
By third parties. So you've got to incentivize third parties. If third parties are feeling ripped off.
Which is an incentive.
Okay, that's a good point. I mean, honestly, they don't have a problem. Lawsuit notwithstanding, they don't have a problem as long as developers keep putting stuff on Apple's
especially
store.
Especially those games, Leo, those games with the Smurf berries and the Polka coins.
Yeah, but don't you think one of the reasons Apple created its gaming, the new gaming platform, is in response to that?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's
Apple
hard.
Knows
they're
that's
making money
bad
off
for
of
them.
When you make money out of something you don't like, it's a weird position to be in.
Yeah.
Well, also there's legal exposure. There just last week there's a legislation that's moving through the House to basically call these loot boxes and call these other sort of in-game purchasing things, kind of regulate them like they're gambling, and to take publishers to task for making gambling software available to kids. So there's a lot of good reasons to do it, part of which to make sure that they can, the parents who are the ones who actually make the money that goes into the App Store through the form of allowances, if they stop letting their kids buy things through the App Store, then they start losing that money. So you may as well make sure the parents are happy.
Eric Benjamin Sufert, writing on the Mobile Dev Memo blog, about the problem with the 30% platform fee in three charts. His final paragraph, Netflix's decision to stop allowing users to register for the service on their iOS devices highlights Apple's difficult rock and hard place position with respect to payments. Smartphone penetration and decreasing hardware sales growth means in-app subscriptions are more important than ever. But in a cross-device world, developers have the option of accepting payments elsewhere. So he's saying give developers tools like lapsed subscriber discounts. Apple makes the case that access to its payments and products fully justifies its platform fee. That's what that's the real risk here for Apple, not this lawsuit, which is going to go away or settle, whatever. It's the long-term risk that developers would turn their back on a store if they don't see it as in their interest.
Well, also, like, there's no value left. I mean, the problem with the App Store is that it created the era of pop apps. We went from having Photoshop that was $1,000 in a box on a store shelf, and you bought one or two apps a year or every couple of years because that's all you could afford, to the expectation that you can have every app anytime you want it. They went from scarcity to ubiquity, and there's very little value in ubiquity. We see that in news. We see that in almost every form of content. We've seen music go from very expensive CDs to $9.99 a month for everything you could ever want to stream. And there's no real walking that back. And the pressure on apps to go down in price or low in price, big companies can afford to give everything away for free. So not only are you people don't want to pay for your apps, but Google or Facebook or Apple is likely making a version of your app for free. And I think one of the greatest problems is that we're just going to lose our capacity for any of the developers that, you know, we here on this panel love to make a living making these apps. And then we'll be stuck in a sort of an era of, you know, nothing, anything wrong with Netflix or Office or any of those things, but that's sort of all
there's
the apps
different
will
constituencies
have.
And
there'll be no money in the platform.
So our friend Rich Siegel, he's happy to be back in the App Store. He's happy to give that 30% cut to Apple. But the marketing, the distribution, there's benefits to him. Netflix, yep, though, by pulling out, cost Apple, its sensor tower estimates, cost Apple $450 million or more. That's how much money they had made so far from Netflix. That's a big chunk to Apple. Isn't that a big risk for Apple? I'm sorry, Jim,
Disney
I keep cutting
Plus
you off.
Make them so, yeah.
Yeah, but Disney Plus is going to solve their woes.
But they could hurt Netflix and make Netflix go running back to Apple. I mean, we don't know how this is going to play out.
Yeah, we're in interesting times. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Jim. I didn't mean to cut you off. Are you?
Oh, no. No, I forget what I was going to say.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Who is being hurt by this? Are consumers hurt by Apple's monopoly? I don't think. I think that's your point, Jim. Not. It doesn't hurt consumers.
Right. I think it helps consumers.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a safe, easy, central place to buy apps, to have our credit card there. I have my Netflix subscription through Apple. I don't see the harm that I see is more that we expect so much for free from our developers. And, you know, everybody here and people watching know developers, know apps that they love. They can't work for free. And they're trying to find ways to monetize what they do without pricing themselves out of the market. And right now, pricing themselves out of the market could be $1.99. You know, that seems ridiculous to me that is where we are. That's the point that we've come to. And we're also worried about Apple taking a 30% cut or Apple inflating the prices of the App Store. Meanwhile, you know, Amazon and Facebook are still collecting all of our data and selling it, and we kind of let that go. And now we're focused on, well, Apple and the App Store. I think our priorities in a bunch of different areas are completely wrong right now.
So, well, we can be focused on several things at once.
Well, we don't seem to be able to do that.
Well, okay. But if the other points that I think need to be made are that I do think that I think the ideal situation is not that Apple is forced to shut down the App Store. It is a huge benefit to consumers. I do believe that there should be a switch buried somewhere in settings that if you really, really, really want to do that, if you really want to sideload this app, we will let you do that. But here are some warnings. And also we will turn off things like we feel as though we can no longer trust this feature if we are allowing a sideloaded app to access it. So we will turn off this, make this ID feature unavailable. We will make Apple Pay unavailable to this outside app. But if you really want to do it, go ahead and do it, because again, $1,000. This is my phone. I can do that. The other things that we should include in this conversation is that remember that the App Store means that apps developers can only do things that Apple is going to allow them to do, which means that a lot of really, really cool ideas that have nothing to do with stealing your credit card number will never be permitted to happen within an iOS app. So I feel as though if Apple were to allow people, developers to sideload apps, in addition to, yes, not having to give 30% to Apple and probably giving 55% to someone else to process the charge, they could really move development of the entire platform forward in little increments to those people who feel as though, gosh, this alternative app launcher is really, really cool, or this enhancement to Siri is really, really cool, or just this ability to stick a USB device into this plug and just mount it onto the file system is really, really cool. That's worth my going to the trouble of turning on this feature. So it's there are a lot of things about this that go above and beyond not wanting to pay 30%, and there are a lot of issues that go beyond the security of the device. And I just think that I see I see the upsides of sideloading apps as being more in quantity and in quality than the downsides of keeping the iPhone as a completely locked down device.
One test case we have of this is Epic Games, and Fortnite. So Fortnite came out first on iOS, which tells you something, by the way, that Epic Games thought that was a more valuable audience. And Apple took 30% of all those, you know, in-game goods that Epic was selling. Quite a lot of money, I'm sure. When Epic had the chance to go on Android, they decided not to go on the Android store. They did, in fact, tell users you'll have to click that switch and sideload it. Initially, there was malware loaded in via the loader. They fixed that. I don't know. I haven't seen any measures of the success or failure of that strategy. But my sense is that it's probably a lot easier to play Fortnite on iOS than it is to play it on Android.
I mean, I continue to maintain that if you want to affect change on the App Store, the best way to do that is to do something on Google Play that you just can't do on the App Store and make it so successful that people start switching to Android just to do that. And so far, a lot of the most popular apps and popular services have all either debuted or been launched at the same time, things like Instagram and Uber.
Isn't that a hazard, though, to Apple that somebody's going to do that?
They could, absolutely. Like if sideloading is so popular on Android that people are leaving iOS in droves to go to Android just to sideload, that is the fastest way you will ever get Apple to allow
sideloading. Well, it's one of the reasons my daily driver is a Samsung Galaxy S10 Plus, because it's a very simple thing, but I don't want to use Apple's Springboard. I want to use, I want to use Google's launcher. I use a third-party launcher, which gives me features I can't get on either of those platforms.
That's why I kind of like having both, because for people who like the console choice model, like the Nintendo model, like game consoles are like this. You can buy cartridges from different places, like you can get links to the App Store from different websites, but all that stuff is going through Nintendo, and that just it. If you don't want to worry about anything, like I understand Andy completely. Like the $1,000 thing, it's mine. But there are people like me who's like, I just don't want to bother with any of this anymore, and I don't want it, to risk. Like I play with this launcher, and now I can't get my font off of Comic Sans, and I've had it with this phone. There's an option on the market for you, and if you hate that, there's a different option, and if enough people hate it, they'll change it. But until then, it's nice to sort of have the different options.
Ben Thompson says it isn't consumers he's worried about. He says, I do believe developers are being harmed by Apple's policies, and I do believe those policies are illegal. The implication of that, though, is that developers who should have the right to sue Apple, that's developers who should have the right, not consumers. And as you pointed out, Renee, this is all about double jeopardy, that the court says only one of the two parties can sue. Only one of them has standing. The court has now said consumers have standing. The majority's argument, Ben goes on to say, that there would not be a sort of double jeopardy with regard to damages. One of the motivating factors behind Illinois Brick is not at all compelling. Apple claims that allowing consumers to sue will result in conflicting claims to a common fund, the amount of the alleged overcharge. Apple is incorrect, and incidentally, the Supreme Court agreed. This is not a case where multiple parties at different levels at a distribution change are trying to all recover the same pass-through overcharge. I think developers have a different axe to grind than consumers. And I think I will grant you, Jim, that consumers benefit by the App Store. And because they do have a choice, they can go to Android. I don't think the harm to consumers is the case for that is very strong. I think there is a case, though, that there's a harm to developers. And clearly, examples like Fortnite and Netflix show that some developers are choosing not to give Apple their 30% VIG.
No, it's very true. But there's also a lot of benefit to developers, and that
yes,
they're
absolutely
given access to this huge platform.
Developers should get the choice, I guess, is the point.
Well,
if you want to pay Apple's 30%, you should, you know, that and be in the App Store and get the marketing benefits and the security benefits. But wouldn't it be nice if a developer had the choice? Maybe not. Maybe the developer should just do what Renee said and write for Android.
Konami code. Just put in the Konami code every time. If you can't remember the Konami code, you're not responsible enough to unlock your device. Yeah.
Is there some remedy Apple could pursue having to do with maybe zero?
Their old one was web apps. Their old one was like, if you don't want to, we have an equally viable alternative for you. It's called HTML apps. You can put an icon on the home screen. And you know, we see progressive web apps on platforms like Microsoft, where they have not had success making modern app platforms. And they will argue that they're first-class citizens. I will argue that there is still a disparity between the types of apps and performance you can get out of native code versus the web. But Apple's whole thing is like, you want to make Playboy? That's fine. Make it a web app. You can't put it on the app.
Actually, and that maybe that is one Apple remedy, which is to put in better support for progressive web apps, better service workers, et cetera, and Safari, so that there can be almost parity between an App Store app and a progressive web app.
WebGL? I don't know.
For instance, we just got an app rejected from Apple TV because we're making little apps for our shows, and they wouldn't accept an app for iOS today. We just got one accepted finally for Hands-On Tech because we had to take out all the imagery that had anything not Apple, including Windows machines, because it's a review show. No Windows machines, no Android devices can be shown. Okay, fine, we did that. But now I don't know how we're going to get iOS Today in there, because they said, well, you can't have an app that's called iOS Today. I think we're going to have to call it Asterisk Today or something like that. I understand. That's Apple's trademark. I understand, although they've allowed us to call that show that for years. We've been MacBreak Weekly for 15 years. I don't want to cause any trouble.
Honest. We had the same problem with the iPhone blog, and it's one of the reasons we ended up changing the name so often.
Yeah, so it's bad for you. It's hard for you as a developer. It's also hard for our listeners who want that app on the Apple TV. It is, after all, an app singing the praises of iOS. So I would say there's benefit all around, but that's the rules, so that's what you do. That's how it is. What was that? What was my point? Well, I guess that's a case where the developer, us, is hurt by Apple's rules. And if we had a progressive web app, we could call it iOS Today. And honestly,
the app we're making could be a progressive
web app. It's not a very impressive progressive web app. Yeah. So I guess the solution I would love Apple to do is make progressive web apps first-class citizens, as Microsoft and Google are both doing. Put better service workers on iOS, make them first-class citizens. Give us the ability, for instance, to store settings in between sessions, which right now you can't do. And that, to me, would eliminate the harm to developers of a closed app store.
Netflix could have a progressive web app, or Amazon, Comixology could have one.
Could be a PWA.
Yeah.
And then they could sell, you know, because it's just a website, they could sell it just as they do now. If you are using Android or Audible on the Apple Store, you have to buy your Audible books through the website and then download them into the store. If you're doing it on an Android, you can buy it within the app.
Yep. And you don't have to worry about arbitrary code execution because JavaScript is a supported element.
Yeah, PWA I think could be made completely secure. I think there's a way to do that. So, I mean,
it won't have any vulnerability that a website wouldn't have.
Yeah, that's true. But Apple secures Safari pretty well.
Yeah.
I'm sure, by the way, Apple does not let you have persistent storage for PWAs, by the way.
It feels like they could sandbox that per instance. Like if you start an instance, it gets its own little secure box. It doesn't get to
there'd be ways
propagate to other instances.
Exactly. Yeah. So in other words, even off the top of our heads here, we've come up with a few solutions that Apple could pursue. I'm sure that some of those will be pursued in the light of this Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Decision.
That it's rare that a company the size of Apple's or half the size of Apple's lets it get so far that they are required by the court to do something that they don't want to do. Usually this thing ends with some sort of an agreement where Apple is allowed to make some changes that the court thinks are appropriate and are certainly well within Apple's ability to negotiate for, and then it goes away. So this, I don't think we'll see a huge change in this. I'm just glad that the conversations like this one are happening.
Yeah. Any other thoughts before we move on? I think we've dissected this.
I just want to talk about lavender phones with Andy at some point.
I'm sorry, that's purplish.
All I'll say is that, like, the day that I can activate that switch on iOS and suddenly have, like, a one-word processor that allows me to use a Bluetooth mouse for cursor control and for user interface, I will sideload that app
June anyway.
Well, yeah, you might with iOS 13, right? In fact, I just got the Bridge keyboard here, which I really like. That makes an iPad look just like a MacBook, doesn't it?
You didn't kill Jason Snell and take his, did you?
No. I had Kickstarted it, and it finally came, which they're still taking pre-orders on the Bridge website, but I think that means they're very close to shipping it. Let me log into my iPad so you can see that it is, in fact, an iPad, not a MacBook. But notice they've got this nice wrist rest where a trackpad would just be so nice. But, of course, there's no support.
An accessibility feature.
Yeah, there's no support for that on iOS, but if... This is going to be a big problem for Bridge if in iOS 13, as rumored, there is mouse and trackpad support suddenly in the iPad Pro. I'm going to have to buy a new Bridge keyboard.
I just plug in a mouse.
Yeah, I guess.
But doesn't it sicken you that you spent all that money on like a portable keyboard solution and the keys, like, there's almost a full millimeter of travel?
It's disgusting.
I know.
And you know, it's like, they wobble in their seat. They're not stiff like a butterfly keyboard. It's actually usable.
You might get that fixed later this year, too.
No
spoilers.
You think that's the rumor? Is that true?
I might have put a video up about it a few days ago.
Yeah, there's...
All right. Now, stop the presses. We're going to hold on. Hold that thought. I want to take a break, and then I want to hear more. Because, well, and there's an interesting... Michael Tsai, who is a longtime Apple developer, in his blog... He's the guy who did the anti-spam solution that I used for years on iOS.
SpamSieve.
SpamSieve. Isn't it great?
That was one of my favorite apps of all time.
Absolutely. God, what a lifesaver. So
Michael's, many non-Heineken email stuff.
Michael's talking in his blog about people shocking, leaving Apple for Windows, now that there's a Linux kernel in Windows. This must be a bad dream. I must have dreamt all this, because there's no way
Bill Gates is spinning
Linux in Windows and developers abandoning Apple to use it can't be. Anyway, we'll talk about that in just a second. There is, I think, a little rebellion among some of us who just can't bear that butterfly keyboard. But first, a word from ZipRecruiter. If you are hiring, you know that this is the hardest job in a business, but it's probably the most important job of a business, because honestly, a business is, that's what a business is. It's people. It's the people you hire. That's what makes the business. There's nothing else. A business is a bunch of people with a common goal, a common aim. The right person can take you to the moon. The wrong person can crash the rocket ship. So you got to do a good job, and yet it's challenging. You know, perhaps there's a perfect person somewhere out there in the mist for that job opening, but where? Which job site do they use? Which of the million resumes you're looking through has that right person? How do you review them? ZipRecruiter simplifies it all. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. It's a smart way to hire. First of all, you post your listing in one place, ZipRecruiter, and they post it to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. And also social media like Twitter and Facebook. So right there, you're cutting through the fog, getting your posting out to the maximum number of people, giving you the best chance of finding that exact right person. But then they make it better, because with their powerful matching technology, they scan through hundreds of thousands of resumes, because people apply for jobs at ZipRecruiter, and they look for people with the right experience, and then they send them a note saying, hey, you should apply to this job. They invite them to apply to your job. It's one of the reasons 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within 24 hours. Our experience has been even better. Lisa was it was breakfast. Our bookkeeper had given us 2 weeks' notice, and Lisa said, I'm going to have to do her work in 2 weeks if I can't find somebody. I said, Lisa, this is a chance to use ZipRecruiter. This is breakfast. She says, oh, yeah, post it. Before lunch, in about about an hour or two, she got her first applicant. She said, oh, this person's good. This is really good. Then another one. Then before lunch, we had three qualified applicants. That's the magic of ZipRecruiter. And, oh, it's better than just, you know, people calling you or filling your inbox. It all goes in the ZipRecruiter interface. ZipRecruiter goes through, analyzes each one, spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. They make it easy for you with screening questions. You get a multiple choice, essay questions, whatever, to screen out the candidates that just don't meet the bill. They format all the resumes so it's easy to scan them. I mean, they do so much to make it easy. You got to do this. Try it for free right now at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. I want you to use that address. That way they'll know you saw it here, so that helps us. But we're going to help you because we're going to get you a free trial at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. It's rated number one by employers in the U.S., and I absolutely rate it number one. It's saved multiple times now. It's saved our lives. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Thank you, ZipRecruiter. So,
Leo, before we go on, I was just reading that Ticketmaster is now nervous the same Supreme Court decision could apply to them. So this should rip all over
artists,
the place.
Artists and Ticketmaster. If there was ever a company that deserves to be sued.
Yeah, really.
You buy tickets at Ticketmaster and they say, oh, and by the way, here's your $48 service charge. What?
They're going to have to find a judge and a jury that has never, ever bought a ticket for anything ever.
Impossible.
Don't get me started. So we went to a Broadway show, the Harry Potter show, that does not use paper tickets. They require you buy it on Ticketmaster online and then have the barcode on your phone. That's the only way you can get in. I guess maybe to save, maybe there's piracy issues. I don't know. But of course, Lisa wants her ticket, so I send it to her. It doesn't work. I can't get my barcode up. We get to the front door. I said, I bought it on Ticketmaster. I can't. The show's about to start. I don't want to miss the beginning. They said, you have to go to the box office. They'll print one for you. So you have to go around the corner. What did I pay the service fee for? Yeah. Nada.
I know this is all about like the human psychology, but just last week I wanted to go see something where the ticket price was $50 and then go to checkout and it's $72. And I suddenly thought, I don't want to, if the ticket price had been $75 or $72 with a $3 fee, I would have paid it. I know it's the same amount of money, but it's just something about your ego says that, if you tell me that you need me to eat dirt, maybe I'll eat dirt. But if now you're making me eat dirt and call it ice cream, and I feel as though that's abusive and that's an abusive relationship.
Yes. I agree with you, Andy. It's crazy that's what happens to us on checkout. You know, you mentally plan on a certain amount. And then when you get there and it's nowhere near the amount, imagine if you had bought four tickets.
Yeah. You know, same problem.
Then you're looking at $100 or more.
Yeah. This is going to now start a whole spate of people thinking, hey, you know, who's rent seeking? Everybody's rent seeking. Who can we sue? Customers and developers.
I didn't like that TV show. I'm suing Netflix.
Because everybody's rent seeking, right? That's the new thing.
I will settle for your. If I could just key the car of one executive at Ticketmaster. Okay, I don't care about the lawsuit. I just want them to know that they've been inconvenienced, and it was because of the business that they're in that people hated them. That's all. I know it's mean. I know it's wrong.
I heard the other day that somebody sued the lottery because. Over 20 years of buying tickets for the lottery, they were never told that they wouldn't win.
What?
And they were they were never told that the odds were so high against them winning. So they sued for 3 years' profits from the lottery plus $500 million.
What?
And this coffee might be hot. Yep, yep. Warning, this coffee might be hot.
Now, they lost because, in fact, the odds were printed on the back of each
ticket.
They're
on every ticket, yeah. It's just that people don't understand probability.
Well,
math is hard.
What does that mean?
Reminds me of go ahead. I was going to. It reminds me of a sketch on Mr. Show where the government was sued by someone who doesn't by someone who made a lot of money and then lost it all. And the government was forced to put a disclaimer on every piece of paper currency, saying that this dollar will no longer be yours after you spend it.
By the way, I just want to finish up on this bridge keyboard. I really like it. It's a very nice keyboard. It really is all going to depend on what Apple does with iOS 13, because I do want more. This could be a great iPad could be a great laptop. At least now I have a good keyboard, backlit. It's got all the function keys. It's really a joy to type on. There is one negative. It's got a giant battery in it because it's a Bluetooth keyboard. It's not. It doesn't use the smart connector, and they say it'll last a year. So obviously they put a massive battery in it. It weighs a pound and a half. It more than doubles the weight of the iPad Pro, and it makes it twice as thick. So if you want your iPad Pro to weigh twice as much and be twice as thick, this is the product for you.
What you should do, Leo, is put two iPads together, and then they can make a Lenovo.
Yeah, did you see that? They're going to do a folding screen Lenovo.
You know, that's actually very interesting. I don't think foldable screens are durable enough yet to make me want to spend more than $80, more than any amount of money that I would care to lose.
They're on basically saran wrap right now.
Yeah, exactly. But it was the interim. So when it's closed, it is a sealed. It's like having a tablet where you don't have to have a tablet cover on it, because when it's closed and it's in your bag, like the screen isn't being exposed. You unfold it and you have a full size tablet or a full size window device. But what really intrigued me was they have when it's sort of half unfolded and you're holding it in your hands like a book, you will have like a left screen and a right screen sort of configuration. So you can either use it as a reader, like as a book reader, where you're seeing two facing pages, or you can have like, here is the, on the left side, here is the thing that I'm reading. On the right side, here's a notes app where I'm taking notes with my pen. It just goes to show that, as silly and premature as I think that every single foldable device we've seen yet is, it really does open up a difference between after 20 years of no longer having just a keyboard and a screen separated by a hinge. Here is a lightweight keyboard and a screen separated by a hinge. Here is a games quality huge keyboard and screen separated by a hinge.
So this is a prototype, but here's a video from The Verge of what it looks like.
Can you imagine Apple like 3 years ago saying, hey, Jim, come take a look at this thing we're going to call the iPhone X. It's a design verification test unit, but just come make a video of it.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? But that's the modern world we live in. You know, Lenovo says, just what do you think? Tell us what you think.
I like the moleskin.
It doesn't have a real keyboard. That's the problem. I mean, you can, I guess,
it
use
does. It does. It has a separate keyboard. It ships with a Lenovo keyboard that you can put together and make like a quote-unquote 13-inch laptop.
Yeah.
But that too is interesting. I used to have a...
Andy, have you moved into a motocross race course?
Is that me?
Who is that? I know who it is. It's Dalrymple. Are they chipping the wood again outside?
Oh, man, I muted it. I didn't think you could hear that.
It sounds like motocross is going on in your living room.
I'm sorry. I did. I have been muting it.
Maybe We could do it from here. Probably that's a better idea. And just wave if you want to say something.
I had the mic muted for the past few minutes while they were, you know, buzzsawing my trees or something.
It's done now, I guess, or at least
temporarily. I apologize.
So one of the reasons I have a Lenovo laptop, which I like a lot, is as a developer, I just can't stand the Mac keyboard. But the Mac is definitely the best development tool. And by the way, not just for iOS and Mac. because you've got BSD, you've got Linux and under the hood, you've got not Linux, Unix under the hood, you've got a real terminal, although I use iTerm, which is a fantastic terminal. You could install Haskell or Perl or Python or Clojure or whatever. You know, I'm running Emacs on it for my Lisp development. It's really nice. But Michael Tsai, on his blog, one of the great Mac developers, quotes Microsoft saying there'll be a full Linux kernel coming soon to Windows 10 as part of its WSL2, Windows Linux hybrid, beast with two backs. Tsai says, what a time to be alive. Does this mean that Microsoft will now ship more up-to-date Unix tools than Apple? And a number of comments from all over the internet, and some of them from Apple developers saying, Marco Arment, this perspective should be most worrisome to Apple. The MacBook Pro seems designed for other people's needs, not mine, especially coming from developers, which Apple has said are the largest category of pro users. I have to point out, no one's ever going to use Windows 10 to develop for the Mac or iOS.
Yep.
So Apple's kind of got that lock in. One of the comments I enjoyed here, see if I could find it, was somebody's never going to happen. Kyle Howell's unrealistic WWDC wish list, gatekeeper for iOS, relaxed app store restrictions with new categories like DevTools, UI kit for Mac uncrippled, redesign and relaxed notarization system. We were talking about that a couple of weeks ago. Pro user automation and performance focus, a sign that easy things should be easy, hard things should be possible, has been deeply and culturally accepted into Apple iOS and Mac OS. Kyle writes, the current philosophy is easy things should be easy and anything more is a security risk.
Yep.
Which kind of is accurate.
Brad
says, after years of endless jokes, 2019 is truly finally shaping up to be the year of the Linux desktop. That's Steven Sinofsky, actually, via Steven Sinofsky.
No, again, the fastest way to get Apple to change something is to make people start leaving them, and then they're going to just do anything possible to fix that bleeding.
I mean, my response to Linux kernel on Windows is, why don't you just put Linux on your damn computer and be done with it?
Microsoft Linux.
Then you get a real Linux, a real kernel, and all the tools, and it's a lovely environment. I'm very happy with Linux on my Lenovo. But now you said something that intrigues me, because I do love MacBooks and I do love Macs and I have, you know, a deep love for Mac OS. If they would just fix that keyboard. So what do you hear?
I think it's because I saw other people talking about it, and I saw Guy talk about it too the other day. But like the scuttlebutt is that along with the 16-inch MacBook Pro, which is basically the 15-inch with smaller bezels, which lets you get closer to the 17-inch screen. So 16-inch MacBook Pro, it'll come with a new keyboard, quote-unquote fixed keyboard. You never know how far to believe this stuff, but the rumor is it'll be more like the Magic Keyboard, which has very low-profile scissor switches on it, and they will even fix the inverted. Like right now, there's no inverted T on the arrow keys, which just drives people out of their minds because there absolutely should be one, and that's on the list of things that'll be fixed as well.
Mm. Would that be announced June?
June, they have done MacBook Pros in June. They have done MacBook Pros in October. So I guess it just depends on how close it is to being released.
I got $8,000 burning a hole in my pocket ready to buy a MacBook Pro. And what about the Mac Pro? It's been very quiet around the Mac Pro.
Preview at WWDC is apparently the aim, that it has to be at a certain point where, I mean, they've been burned before by showing things off before they're ready.
Yes.
So part of me wants them to wait.
Yes.
But also, this is the big developer show. And if you're going to ship this year, like with the iMac Pro in 2016, was it 2017?
But how long does it take to develop a computer, even from scratch? It's been 2 years.
The problem is that their bandwidth for Mac is like, they're only making like two or three iPhones a year. The Mac is a way bigger product category. Even iPads, now iPads are big all of a sudden, but they were only making one or two iPads every 18 months, which is not a hard thing to do. But there's like 5-6 Macs that they should be updating every year. And even if it's just new processors, there's a lot that goes into like you can't just shove the processor in the old computer, because then you get the thermal problems that we've been seeing. So there's a lot of stuff they have to do. Now they have to go back and finally fix that damn keyboard. That pushes something else out by the amount of time it takes that team to to fix that keyboard. So it's really like a prioritization thing. But they have gotten better over the last few years. Like, there was just no excuse for all that stuff lingering for as long as it did. But now we have the MacBook Air finally, the Mac Mini finally, so many finallys, and the Mac Pro. The only concern is that from some people, they really just want what they have fixed. Like, they would just really like the 2015 MacBook Pro back with modern processors. And they really just want the cheese grater back with modern processors. And Apple's sort of like, no, we can do better. And you're like, please don't.
Yeah.
Please don't try to do better.
Yeah, there's actually, I think last week there was someone had a render.
Here it is.
This is kind of Mac Pro Phoenix.
Not true.
This is bogus, obviously.
Yeah,
exactly.
Although the shopping list on the left looks pretty good. A Xeon W Cascade Lake T2 security chip.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Apple X2 accelerator would be. DDR5 SODIMM RAM. 3 double wide PCIe 4 slots, single or dual AMD Fire Pro X, or, as long as we're imagining things, how about an NVIDIA Quattro RTX PTO? Never going to happen. Thunderbolt 3, 8 of them. 2 HDMI.
My thing was, like, I know the NVIDIA, like, there's still reasons why Apple and NVIDIA don't get along, and most of it comes down to they're both big and successful and proud. But I would like them to get along just enough to officially support eGPU, because then Apple can buy from AMD for their computers. There's no problem. And people who want the latest, biggest, greatest CUDA core thumping NVIDIA card that they want can just buy it, throw it in an enclosure, put it on, and buy a new one every year if that's really what they want.
You can do that now, but the drivers don't exist, so you have to mess with it.
Yeah.
The other nice thing about NVIDIA support is that would make the Hackintosh community very, very happy if there were drivers for NVIDIA everywhere.
That's a good point,
But there's so many things that give Apple such a great advantage that also in some cases become a big problem. The fact that they are the only makers of Mac hardware means that every time they can't just put components together in a box, just not in the same way that anybody can go to Newegg or a flea market with about $800 to $1,000 and just buy components and build a really, really good Windows 10 box. This is going to be the only machine that's going to be on the market as a pro Mac machine, and they're going to have to support it for years and years and years and years. So I really do think that even if they wanted to call it like the Mac Pro Legacy Edition, where they just said, you know what, we still got the tooling for the cheese grater, we can put together something that is easy for us to support as the original cheese grater and just build it with modern components, and that will at least keep people in the family for the 4 or 5 years that we want to spend creating the idealized Mac Pro. Unfortunately, this is just not how they can do a project like that. It's just institutional. Again, it works so well. Exactly.
Pulling him off the new one to make the old one.
It'd
be interesting to see how the Mac Pro comes out of this too. I mean, that is a very powerful machine, but it's not, you know, as modular or upgradable as what the Mac Pro supposedly will be. So that to me is going to be a very interesting trade-off.
Is it possible to get one of the new Mac Minis and actually it's faster than the iMac Pro, which has not been updated? I feel like it is.
It's so different because the Xeon chips already are generations behind the consumer chips. Like, there's Skylake still, and there are the Cascade Lake ones coming out, but they're really for multi-core, and there's a limit to the amount of multi-core you have in the Mac Mini still, or at least the Enterprise. And also you have the ECC RAM. Like, there's just so many sort of heavy-duty components that
I just got the Alex Lindsay 1.5 Alex Ricoh Theta Z1 camera. Alex made me buy. He made me do it. You saw him do that on the show. He twisted my arm. But Ricoh does make stitching software for Mac and Windows. And of course, I'm going to do it on my iMac Pro because of the multi-threading and all that. I hope it takes advantage of all that. But you know, you want, when you're doing stuff like stitching 360 degree 4K video, you do want some horsepower under the hood. There are times when you really need that.
I was watching Jonathan Morrison's Final Cut demos where he was doing, I think he was pulling it off the Arri Alexa in, or just looking at Marquez, and they're throwing like 8K red raw files around in Final Cut. Like it's a normal video.
Yeah. If you need the horsepower, clearly, and those people know they do, and $5,000 is not, or if you beef it up, $15,000 is not too much, to spend. Let me just take a picture of you guys, by the way. There you go. Smile. Oh, that's a
Alex
video.
Alex made so much off that affiliate revenue that he took a vacation.
Oh, son of a... I'm suing him. Talk about rent seeking. Oh, my God. Yeah, where'd he go? He got me to buy this, and then he disappeared. Son of a gun. So
I'll
Apple
sell a monorail to the next town.
Yeah. What about us drunken slobs? You'll be given cushy jobs. Monorail.
Let's talk Apple Pay. Apple has announced that what is it? One touch Apple Pay now is or no touch Apple Pay is coming to the world. Somebody needs to explain this. It's I guess it's going to support NFC. Apple Pay NFC stickers. And part of this is because the new Bird scooters, you just walk up to the scooter, tap it, and Apple Pay will pay it. No app, no face recognition, nothing.
Yeah.
That's a disaster and waiting to happen. Thank you for taking a scooter ride. I didn't take a scooter ride.
I need to see the demo because I'm not
a scooter.
I walked past a scooter.
Yeah, it's hard to understand what model there you like, whether it's account, like you have an existing account and it just pulls off your, it goes for your existing.
I have.
It's sort of like
also,
the new app, like there's a new TV app and like you can just two click to subscribe to shows, and people are worried that their kids are going to subscribe to all these different channels. It's for free trials then you still have to author. But like it's hard to understand just based on the quick demos what's really going on until you get down in front of it and sort of walk yourself through the transaction step by step.
Yeah. Yeah. I really wish this had been an Apple demo, that they'd really done it like a keynote demo, because my first thought is, okay, I'm a bad person. I'm going to make up a whole bunch of NFC stickers and put them on the top of the NFC stickers that are on the Bird scooters.
Oh, geez.
that don't auto pay, but it will take you to what looks like a very official looking Bird site. Oh, we really do need you to revalidate. Could you type in your credit card number and we'll get you right through. So I don't know. Not that I think that this is a weak thing that they're doing. I just don't understand how it works yet. And I'm sure
white hat service.
Well, I'm sure.
Hey, I'm not going shopping with you.
Yeah. I'm sure Apple's thought this out. I mean, if nobody, Apple's number one in security.
Yeah.
This was announced at a event called Transact, a conference for mobile payment technologies in Las Vegas. It was Apple's vice president of Apple Pay, Jennifer Bailey, doing the demo. And she announced that the company's partnering with Bird Scooters, Bonobo's clothing store, and pay by phone parking meters for the initial rollout. That she also announced that inside the wallet app, users will soon be able to sign up for loyalty cards with one tap. And it's not clear exactly how it's
I mean, there's like
work.
Oyster, where you can just tap and go through like Subways, and all that stuff is worked out. I just don't understand what the model is here yet.
A lot of it is because below a certain purchase amount, the system doesn't even bother validating until the transaction is complete. So they figure that for like when I buy my plain donut at Dunkin' Donuts at Back Bay Station, it goes through immediately because they figure that no one's going to try to steal like $1.09. And if they do, well, they have my ID. They'll catch up with me later, or they'll try to make it right later on. It's, I don't know what the threshold is, but
I think it's
something. Like or it might be even less than that. Basically, I think the metric is a cup of coffee. So this is America, so that could be $20.
Welcome, as a matter of fact, to the strawberry frappuccino with the pineapple twist. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, there is actually a scam going on where someone will have on the subway will have like a disguised NFC reader, like a point of purchase reader, and they will just sort of sneak up to you and just like bump into you and just like tap your phone. It does. I've heard people say that this exists, but I don't know how they would be holding it closely enough that that the actual transaction would go through. But it just goes to show that for a dollar and 10 cents, they're really not willing to. It's going to cost them a lot more money to prevent theft of $1.10 versus just refunding the money when they think that you've been scammed.
The details are it's bank specific. As you know, your MasterCard or Visa card is backed by a bank. So the bank that backs it decides. In some discount stores and supermarkets, Visa cards for transactions of up to $50 without requiring a PIN or cardholder signature. In other words, just tap and go. MasterCard features a similar limit for debit card customers. Not all banks allow it.
It's $100 in Canada. Like you can tap to pay for anything up to $100. American Express has no limit in many situations.
That's dangerous.
The only problem we have is that the interface. Even though the interface knows it's $100, it'll still present the tap thing over $100, like $150. Tap to pay, and you're like, oh, great, sorry, not accepted. Like, just fix that at the interface level.
That yeah, like I mean, what they could do is say, okay, here, now you need to give us the PIN because it's over $100. That would not be a weird way to do it.
No.
So that's why it's confusing. Why, you know, a lot of times in the airport, I'll buy a sandwich before I get on the plane, and they just say, go ahead, you're done. It's like, well, you don't want me to sign it or anything? No. But you don't ever know. You never know. It just depends.
I'm shocked in the U.S. Like, they'll say, like, I start to walk away, and they go, and so you have to sign. I go, what?
Sign?
What century is this?
What does that do? Yeah. And by the way, you can sign it any way you want it. I don't know if you've ever... You can go...
And last time a waiter took my card away, I haven't seen that since, like, the 80s.
Oh, yeah. We're savages down here south of the
I know.
Yeah.
Sir, you're not
chasing them
anymore.
Down and tackling them.
Give me my card!
Yes!
Where are you going?
What are you doing?
For those of you who've never been outside the U.S., in most other countries, the waiter comes to you with a thing that he swipes in front of you and prints out the thing.
You don't even swipe anymore. Like, he brings it to you, you tap it, and he walks away.
Right. someday we'll live in your future, your Canadian future.
our frozen flooding Canadian future.
Well, can I just, again, since we're light on topics this week, can I just like complain that we're in that horrible in-between transition where like almost every point of purchase area that I enter has some sort of a screen and a chip and card reader, but only, let's say, 70% of them take tap to pay. And so, like, I'm kind of embarrassed to even try tap to pay because I'll be the person who's holding up the line by doing something stupid.
Yeah.
And I correct this behavior after about 2.5 months of not knowing what to do at this one particular store.
I still
we need that little sticker.
Every time I fly, I print out a boarding pass because I don't want to be the one guy who's got his QR code on his Apple Watch. It's going like this.
I do it for security now because there's so many horror stories about devices being demanding passwords at the border.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a good point. Yeah. You want to wipe all your devices before you go anywhere.
No, because apparently the laws cover that too. I just walk through with a paper boarding pass and mind my own business.
Isn't that?
I've been bombed back to the Stone Age and
I'm happy. To the Stone Age and I'm happy. Boy, it's really a light day.
Purple phones, Leo. Purple phones.
Oh, you want to talk? Purple did phones. Andy? Did you get a purplish Pixel 3A?
No. I'm deciding which one to order, but I'm more. I gotta say that if the rumors about the new colors for the new phones could become true, that's another point in the points race to get me to switch back to iPhone as my
iPhone
daily driver.
iPhone 10R2 with purple and green, Leo.
Yeah, and I mean real purple. I'm disappointed in the Pixel because they should have just called it lilac. It's kind of like a pinkish lilac.
It's a light purple.
This is 2019. We don't have to be so caught up in we can't sell pink phones to everybody. I'll buy a pink phone, I will also buy the hell out of a purple phone.
Do you think the
especially if they will they give me an option where I can replace the Apple logo with the Prince logo? Because I would buy two of those.
Purple phone.
Ooh, and that actually also fits in with the rumor there'll be three lenses. So they'll be like in his last series of albums where he's wearing those three lensed spectacles. There you go.
Oh, I forget who it was, but it might have been Telosa Tech, but someone was posting a picture of the yellow iPhone 11R with Pikachu, showing how it looks like his two eyes and open mouth, Leo. So you can get the yellow phone and it'll just.
I do love like what people
look
do.
Look like Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
That's
have you seen it yet, by the way?
People.
Have you seen Detective Pikachu?
I took my godkids on the weekend.
See, everybody I ask, they go to see it, but it's always, oh, but I took the kids.
No, so they were the only ones who would go with me, like, full disclosure.
That's the truth. They took Uncle Renee.
It was cute, but my godkids both said, oh, I like that way more than I thought I would. You know, they weren't expecting much because they've been burned by video game movies before.
I think that's the reaction.
Ryan Reynolds is darn charming.
Yeah.
And Deadpool being Pikachu was just amazing.
Explain to me why Mark Gurman tweeted a photo of shards of glass to talk about the different colors of the
phone. Mark is tweeting a lot. I wonder if Bloomberg takes too long to get his stuff up now. He's just tweeting it.
But those are like broken off.
Those are just broken off pieces of the back plate from the iPhone XR showing some of the different colors.
They're pretty.
Yeah. And then Ben Geskin on Twitter recolored them closer to what he thought that they were. He took some of the renders.
Yeah, because this might be darker when you had a backing on it or something like that. Yeah. Yeah, the renderings probably give you a better sense of it. I like the green. I think that's kind of pretty.
It's all about that purple, though, Lee. I mean, the green looks like the Hulk. That's fine, but I like the purple.
I need a darker purple.
Yeah. I want to see the back, Jim, because the sides on the 10R are very different than the back plate. So I'm waiting to see what that back plate looks like.
Yeah.
I bought the product Red 10R. And I love it. I just think red is so beautiful. But you put these gorgeous things in a case. So
the clear case, though, I mean, it still looks really good in the clear case.
Yeah. You like to live dangerously, Mr. Dalrymple.
I've never used a case. Well, actually, that's not true. The only time I used a case was with one of the older iPhones. When I would travel and the battery wasn't as good, I'd use a Mophie case. But other than that, I don't use the case. The battery's
battery case for that now.
Copy 386 says, the reason Mark Gurman tweeted those shards is so we'll know what our phone looks like when we break it. I just thought, why not? Let's see how much money I could spend on a Samsung Galaxy S10 Plus. So I got the ceramic back.
Which is that the 5G?
No. They didn't have the 5G yet. And there's no 5G carrier even within 1,000 miles of me.
It's not the point, Leo. It's like Bitcoin. You just got to get it.
It's as dumb as buying a ceramic back for an extra couple $100, especially since I carry it in a case all the time. But it is lovely. Once in a while, I'll just take it out and go, oh, yeah, that's pretty. I suppose, so apparently, how do you keep from dropping it, Jim? You just hold on tight?
I don't think about it. If I think about dropping it, I'd probably drop it.
See, because I think the back wouldn't break, but that doesn't mean the front's any less fragile.
Ceramic shatters, glass cracks, plastic splits, and metal bends. I mean, like, it's just material science,
win.
Leo.
You can't win.
And hearts.
Unless you get vibranium,
as soon as my phone stops to drop, my beard shuts down and just grabs it.
It reaches out. I know there's tentacles in that beard. He goes, I got you.
I was asking around, and apparently the cameras are arrayed the way they are on the back because there's some mathematical advantage to having all of the different, like the telephoto, the wide angle, and the ultra wide angle, all within the same, like, all at the exact same distance apart.
So that, we that's think going that to those, enable that some those, of the math. Those but, images are actually accurate.
Yeah.
Huh. So these are because they're molds, right? So I guess, I don't know. Does that
mean more? We've had everything. We've had the three stages of leaks, Leo. We've had the molds. We've had the prototypes. We've had the plates. We've had.
And it does come from Mark Gurman, so it must be true.
Tweet it out.
So this the arrangement is like a triangle, kind of. There's two, and then there's one in the middle between it. And then what are these little things? That's the flash and the
flash and the microphone.
Microphone, okay. Yeah. All right. And then so this would be the
10R gets two.
This would be the Max. Oh, this is the 10R in the middle.
Yeah, the 11 and the 11 Max get the three cameras and the 11R gets the two cameras.
I have three cameras on this Galaxy and I love the ability to have three different focal lengths. I think it really is nice.
Yeah.
Weird that they
just to extend the concept of what they were doing with the twin lenses before, to have this really, really slick zoom feature with an extended range without having to do with any of the mechanics of having like an actual mechanical zoom.
Yeah.
It really is very, very slick.
I'll show you. I don't know. Can you see how well can you see this over my shoulder? I don't know. You'll find it. It's one of those cameras in there. You don't have an over the shoulder shot.
Laporte cam. There 5, it is.
So that's the close up. That's the middle, and then the wide gets like everything. Yeah,
it's
in
so
there.
Good.
So yeah. That's really kind of cool. I'll do it again. Close up. So you, I mean that really is kind of a zoom. That's the now. Will Apple do that? Will Apple give you?
They did that with the 1X, 2X, so I think that's just a very easy.
Yeah, it's just extension. Like the 1X, 2X would be 1X, 2X, 3X, or whatever the next thing is. I use the wide a lot, even though there's a little barrel distortion. I really like having, like when you're taking pictures, as I did last night, we had 12 people at dinner, you get everybody's in it. It's easy. Yeah. You don't have to say, everybody really lean cool in, that, get to the know
really
each
cool
other.
Thing Gurman was talking about is that it can fire all three cameras, even if you're using the middle camera, for example.
Yep.
And then if you cut somebody off or it damages it, it can just reclaim that data from the other camera buffer and repair the photo for you.
How googly of them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's also more data. Even if you're just using a focal length that's equivalent to the middle camera, it'll get information from the telephoto. It'll get information from the wide angle to do things like skin smoothing, to do things like foreground extraction. No piece of data is going to be wasted. You're sending electrons to all three sensors anyway. You may as well actually make use of them.
Yeah, yeah, or photons even.
Yeah,
yeah. Let's take a break.
It's interesting to look at like the 10R. Can I just add one more thing?
Please.
It's interesting to look at it because Apple plans these phones 2 years, 3 years out. So the phones we're getting now were planned long ago, but they're sticking with a slightly worse camera and slightly lower resolution and different screen technology as the way of lowering the price. Where Google with the 3A, they're keeping the camera, everything they can possibly do to keep that camera, even if they have to reduce the processor and the processing speed and all of those things. And it feels like if somebody could figure out a way to put like a really good processor and a really good camera and just compromise on everything else, and there'll be nothing to complain about the inexpensive phones anymore.
Now we will take a break to tell you about the best place to make your next website or maybe your first website. In fact, I really want to talk to people who think that having a Facebook page or a Twitter account gives you a web presence. It does not. You need a website. Sure, you can link back to your website from your Facebook or your Twitter, but having your own site is so important. As an individual, doubly so for a business. And where's the best place to do it? Well, where one-third of the entire internet does, WordPress.com. WordPress makes it easy to build a gorgeous website. Powerful site-building tools, thousands of themes. And the best part is, if you ever have a question, support 24/7 from actual WordPress experts and enthusiasts. It's not somebody just reading a notebook. This is somebody who really knows their stuff. And I've loved it. Every interaction I've had with the support team at WordPress. That's where my blog is. Leo Laporte is at WordPress. LeoLaporte.com is at WordPress.com. I self-hosted for a while, and I realized WordPress.com does it better. They take care of all the hosting, all the updates, all the patches. They give you all the plugins you could ever want. And by the way, no blog platform has better plugins, a better variety of plugins than WordPress. WordPress.com lets anyone pursue whatever it is they love by launching a site that's free to start with room to grow. In fact, I started with the free tier, and now I'm using the business tier because I love having all those capabilities. But it's easy to start. No two-week trials. There's no hidden fees. And most importantly, the reason why you have to have your own website, that's the only place you can go where you own your content forever. Upload text, images, movies, music, whatever you want. Download it whenever you want. It's yours. It's your content. And WordPress.com is built to grow with you to get you where you want to be tomorrow. If you're a business, you can sell on WordPress.com. They've got great e-commerce solutions. It's a great way to put your name out there so that when people Google your name, they find your best stuff. WordPress is so flexible, so powerful. Many of the biggest companies on earth just say, "No, we're going to use WordPress.com." Kind of wish we had after seeing the final bill for our website, WordPress.com. That's why Fortune.com is our WordPress.com site. That's why Quartz, that beautiful Quartz site, is a WordPress.com site. Millions of people use WordPress.com every day to turn their dreams into reality. Shouldn't you? Go to WordPress.com/MacBreak and you can get 15% off any new plan purchase. WordPress.com/MacBreak for 15% off your new website. Do that for us. When they see that, they go, "Yeah, we like these guys." They sent us some traffic. And we thank WordPress for not only giving us a little ad buy here, but for supporting my site, Steve Gibson's site, everybody I know, they do such a great job. WordPress.com/MacBreak. I'm stealing a little thunder from Steve. I'm sure he'll cover this in an hour on Security Now. Zombie load. Yes, another Intel vulnerability. Intel chips, and that includes Apple devices. 4 bugs that can allow hackers to steal sensitive information right from the processor. Go directly to the source. Zombie load, they say, is just as serious as Meltdown and Spectre. Here's the good news. Thank you, Apple. If you're using Mac OS 10.14.5, that explains why you got that update, you're safe. It affects every Intel computer dating back to 2011. Not ARM, not AMD. Here's the demo of Zombie Load. Zombie Load in action. So I don't know if you can gather anything from this demo, but basically they're spying on your web browsing. And so what you see on the right is the text that tells the hacker what you're doing on the left. But it could also be used to steal passwords. No reports so far of any attacks using Zombie Load. Intel has released microcode updates for vulnerable processors. And the Mojave, this is why you want to install that update you got yesterday. The Mojave 10.14.5 update will fix that. And
I think you need physical access, right, to exploit it.
Oh, well, that's good. If that's the case, it's nothing to be set your hair on fire for. But let me see. Oh, by the way, there is a performance hit. An Intel spokesperson told TechCrunch most past consumer devices could take a 3% performance hit at worst. Data center, 9%. That's where Spectre and Meltdown and I gather Zombie Load is an issue, is on a shared processor as in a data center, where you could have a malicious process running on the same machine as your process.
And are those hits cumulative? Like, do we have to add those to the previous hits we took from the previous Meltdown mitigation? It's like, is it 1% here, 2% there? All of a sudden, it's real percentages.
So, according to TechCrunch, Zombie Load is easier than Spectre, but harder than Meltdown. And it requires a very specific set of skills.
Liam Neeson, stay away from my computer.
Skills that make people like you very scared. Every Intel chip since 2011. It's just Intel's the gift that keeps on giving. When is Apple going to put their own chips in the computers? Do you think that's
what... It feels like sooner and sooner, right?
Do you think that's what's holding up the Mac Pro, is maybe they want to make that be the first one with its own...
It's hard to imagine the Pro would be the first one, just because to go from Xeon to ARM is a big jump. We're going from Core, they call them Core i5 now. I still think they're M5s, whatever. Those seem like a much
mobile.
Easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even know this was possible. Did you know that there is a government group called the Committee on Foreign Investment within the U.S. or CFIUS? Yes, you did, apparently. Your dog did. CFIUS has ordered the Chinese company that owns Grindr to sell by 2020. You might wonder why a Chinese company would buy a popular gay dating app. Although I think if you have some imagination, you might have some ideas. Beijing Kunlun Tech Company said it reached an agreement that prohibits the company from accessing information about Grindr's users and requires a sale before June 30th, 2020. Nor will Grindr be able to transmit any sensitive information to any entities based in China. It's a security agreement, and I think you can imagine that the Chinese government might be very interested in anybody they could blackmail if they're not out.
And you figure they could have stopped the sale before it happened rather than peeling
really,
it back
after. Really should have. But at least, you know, it's done. Amazon announced next day delivery. They said it's going to cost us $800 million. Walmart says, yeah, we could do that. And we could do it today in Phoenix, Las Vegas, and Southern California. They'll reach 75% of the country by the end of the year. One day.
We're going to send it to you before you order it. We just think you want it.
We know what you want. Free next day delivery.
Every day.
If you order more than $35. You know who this benefits is? Google, because Google, the problem Google Assistant has is, you know, it's not Amazon, but Google has cobbled together a bunch of commerce partners, including Walmart, for their assistant. And if you can, you know, I mean, I honestly still use the Echo just because I can buy stuff that way. But if I get free next day from Walmart, maybe. $35 would be the minimum for the free one-day shipping.
Google has changed its express requirements several times. It's kind of confusing now. I mean, first it was, we'll deliver anything for free, which wasn't viable. Then we'll deliver a certain amount for free. And then it went to, we'll pay a monthly fee and we'll deliver whatever you want for free. And I think now it's back to a certain amount. So I, you know, those kind of things, when it just jumps around and it seems like they have no idea what they're doing,
it's not a good
you
experience.
Just kind of stop using it.
Yeah. Well, you're going to love, you know, this because you don't know
what you're going to be charged.
You only get next day delivery if all the items you're buying are at the same warehouse. You do know which warehouse your items are at, right?
Of course, it'll pick it up on volume. I'll just use my Apple Pay to get a scooter and go pick it up myself.
Yeah. It's also really difficult because, like, Amazon, for instance, is trying to avoid hiring people who work for Amazon and deliver, which is why they went to all of the trouble of saying, hey, independent contractors, we will help you, independent contractors, create your own independent contracting business that only delivers for Amazon. Which they could get this all up and running so much faster if they just simply said, we are a huge company. We can afford for certain cities where it's worth our while to actually hire more people to actually buy or lease trucks, vans to make these quick short hop deliveries. But if they keep relying on sort of an Uber task force that are probably within the next 2 or 3 years going to start to fight to unionize or start to, depending on the mood of the federal government or state governments, start to get limitations on how much you can treat a full-time employee as though they don't work for you, it's just not going to work out.
It's also amazing because they say one day shipping, but it's not. It's like one day delivery once it ships. And I was watching a YouTuber try it out, and he ordered like 5 things. It might have been John Prosser. I don't want to get that wrong, but like 3 of them took 4 days, and 2 of them still haven't arrived because they just haven't shipped yet. So the delivery doesn't really matter.
It's not really one day, then, is it?
It's one day once they ship, Leo.
Oh,
yeah. It kind of makes you think about how big the Google at I/O last week expanded the feature of a Google Assistant to actually interact with real world, like, people and real world real world websites as well. If you were to ask Alyosha or ask your Google Assistant, like, I just need this as soon as possible, ideally tomorrow, will your assistant then be able to navigate multiple websites to look for local stores that actually have it in stock where you can pick it up today, or local stores that will actually do next day delivery for you? And then doesn't matter whether it came from Amazon, whether it came from Walmart, whether it came from Best Buy, at least you know that within an hour you can have this thing. Oh, yeah. So
God, Google can abstract them the way they abstracted Google.
Yeah.
I wish they would do that. That's the problem with these assistants. They're just not very bright. If they would only.
I want to see that Google robot assistant get on and deal with press 1 if you want this, or press 2. I want to see how it navigates that. Yeah.
I think within 3 days. No, within 3 days, it would learn the operator.
Operator is not a menu option. Please
operator.
Try
operator.
I want to see that Google Assistant get mad and slam the phone down.
So a couple of Adobe stories. First of all, the good news. There's good news and the bad news. What do you want? Good news or bad news? Here's the good news.
Bad news first.
Bad news first? All right. I'll give you the bad news first. Adobe has sent out a warning to users of the older versions of Creative Clouds, including Photoshop, Premiere Pro, and Lightroom, saying you could be sued if you continue to use these, which is a little confusing. It's apparently not being sued by Adobe. A little legwork from Apple Insider came up with the well, here's what Adobe's statement to Apple Insider was. Adobe recently discontinued certain older versions of Creative Cloud applications. Customers using those versions have been notified they're no longer licensed to use them and were provided guidance on how to upgrade to the latest authorized versions. Unfortunately, customers who continue to use or deploy older unauthorized versions of Creative Cloud may face potential claims of infringement by third parties. Ooh. Well, we can't comment on claims of third-party infringement as it concerns ongoing litigation. So they did a little research. Turns out Dolby has been suing Adobe over copyright infringement and breach of contract. The theory is that Adobe licensed some Dolby technologies with an agreement based on how many discs were sold. But when the software went online, the companies renegotiated. But Dolby, according to the legal filing, when Dolby sought to exercise its rights to audit Adobe's books and records to ensure proper reporting and payment, Adobe refused to engage in even basic auditing and information sharing practices. Apparently, Dolby says, and this is in the lawsuit, Adobe determined that it was better to spend years withholding this information from Dolby than to allow Dolby to understand the full scope of Adobe's contractual breaches.
Wow.
Better call Saul.
God bless America.
So, another thing that's so frustrating is, like, as a Creative Cloud subscriber, I think I have the latest version of Photoshop. Then every once in a while I go in there and I find out they've put a new version up and it's not automatically upgrading me. I have to install the new version, and then do I install the old version? That takes away some of the components of the new version. It just...
Well, that's the problem. Is
supposed to fix all this.
A lot of people choose to use older versions of Adobe products because they don't want the changes, even though they're subscribers to the Creative Cloud. And that should, it would feel like, well, I'm paying Adobe their monthly fee. I don't understand why. But, well, now you know. There's collateral damage in this war between the dinosaurs, Adobe and Dolby, and the collateral damage is you. Yeah. So that was the bad news. The good news: Adobe is now opening Photoshop for iPad beta signups. So if you're a Creative Cloud subscriber, search your inbox. I haven't gotten mine yet, for an email saying, inviting you to apply so that you can get pre-release versions of Photoshop for iPad. It was announced way back when at Adobe Max.
Yep. But
it would be fun to play with it. I'm excited. I think... Probably iOS 13, right? That's when everything suddenly turns into, you know, real computing on the iPad. Maybe.
Yeah.
Trademark.
It's going to be interesting to see how long they can get, how long Apple can continue with the idea of, no, you don't need a mouse. We're not going to support a pointing device for the general population as opposed for special needs people. We will let you use a keyboard, but it's not really that important. It's going to be funny if they ever find a time where the most natural iPad product to put in to expand the line would be to build a 2-in-1. Like a yoga style notebook where the screen can fold 360 degrees to the back, and suddenly have to say, I know this has a keyboard and a trackpad and a screen that is attached via hinge, but this is not a MacBook. Please keep buying MacBooks.
By the way,
will
they skip unlucky 13 and just go straight to iOS 14? No.
Well, I mean, they skipped iPhone 9, so anything's possible, but. I was going to say, like, how long did it take? I remember when the Mac came out, there was, like, no arrow keys and no terminal because you had to learn to use the GUI. Damn it. They were not going to let you just keep using your... But then, like, after a while, it had arrow keys and a CL. I think, like, the Apple has this philosophy where they're not going to give you the old input until they're darn sure that you invested your homework, young man, and you learned the new input. And then after a while, it's like, all right, fine, just take your darn old input technologies.
No, I don't think it was just the users. It was also the developers saying, I know that you're going to want to simply make a version of PFS file that just uses all the command keys. We're telling you that we don't want you to do that. And we trust you so much. We're actually ripped out the keys from the prototypes to make sure you have to do that.
If you're using WhatsApp, update it now. Apparently,
can you believe the story?
Or delete it,
which would be a better idea. Unfortunately, a lot of people have to have it because that's how they communicate with other people who refuse to use anything but WhatsApp. It's a zero-day exploit. an exploit that comes from an Israeli hacking firm. The NSO group, they build exploits and surveillanceware that governments purchase. And right? Apparently they sold a package called Pegasus to some government unknown, which then got snuck into a silent infection into WhatsApp. And I guess discovered by security researchers, WhatsApp prior to
what's like a buffer overrun, right? That could do executable code.
A buffer overflow vulnerability that requires no input from the user whatsoever.
Yeah, you could call them, and whether they answered or not, you could send this code, which would then put Pegasus on there.
And of course, your WhatsApp account is tied to your phone number, so they call it. You got Pegasus on there.
Yeah,
it's basically a phone call. We'll hack you. Engineers at Facebook scrambled over the weekend to patch the hole and updated WhatsApp yesterday. So please update. If you're using iOS prior to WhatsApp for iOS prior to 2.19.51, WhatsApp Business prior to 2.19.51, WhatsApp for Windows prior to 2.18.348, and if anybody's using WhatsApp for Tizen...
Yes, you.
That one guy prior to 2.18.15, just update the damn thing, and it'll be removed. But boy, how long's that been in there?
Yeah, they don't know. It took them 10 days to patch it. No idea how long it was open. And this is like nation state level stuff. So they won't say how many. They said, I think, a dozen or dozens of people. But there's no real way of knowing. And it at WhatsApp scale, even a very small percentage of people is a lot of people.
Well, Citizen Lab, which monitors Pegasus, says that they know that somebody tried to use the exploit as late as Sunday night to infect a UK-based human rights lawyer's phone. He had helped people in Mexico and Saudi Arabia. And apparently, you know, so you can kind of guess who the perpetrators might be. So on the other hand, the lawyer was suing NSO, the company that made the spyware, but NSO says, no, we would never use our software to attack anybody. It's only used by intelligence and law enforcement agencies. Amnesty International and others this week will urge the Israeli military to ban the export of NSO Group's software on the grounds it sold to governments with questionable track records on human rights. The human rights lawyer told Forbes Tuesday he started receiving strange video calls over WhatsApp around 3 weeks ago in the early hours of the morning from a number with Sweden's country code. That's when he tipped off Citizen Lab. The lab then told WhatsApp, so that's how they found the security hole, was this lawyer. Okay.
And just to be clear, there's a lot of agencies from a lot of countries that, regardless of how you feel about the country, the agencies have done things that we're not happy with.
So. The thing to remember is that's going to be a targeted attack. They're not going to use it against everybody. They're going to be calling specific people that they want to target. And, you know, if you're a target of a nation state, you're screwed.
Yeah, I mean, this is coming on the heels of a report that bad people of whatever description you want to describe them as have people sort of embedded at Verizon and embedded at phone companies to make it very, very easy to clone SIM cards for, again, and when you consider that you get the keys to the kingdom if you are able to transfer authorization codes and double authorization to your phone as opposed to the person that you want to hurt. That's pretty damn bad. I really do think that as quaint as we feel that stories about the 1930s and 1940s where, you know, you could just like stand on a road and stick your thumb out and someone would come and strangers would give you rides places and banks would leave their doors open and just leave a pencil by the ledger saying deposit whatever you want, take out wherever you want. I think that in 20 years time, people are going to be looking at 2019 about digital security in exactly the same way, that so many things are just so easy because they're almost impossible to prevent this kind of fraud at scale. We're going to have to find solutions to these because it's going to get from individually high value targets to, oh, what the hell? Let's just see if these 1,000 people, let's see if we can get SIM cards for 8 of them. And of those 8, let's hope we can get one person who has over $1 million in an investment account that we can move over.
Fishing to trawling.
I'm getting a flip phone.
There you go.
And then, maybe in Canada you can leave your phone unlocked, but not over here.
And then there's the California Consumer Privacy Act, which goes into effect January 1st. It will be the strongest U.S. privacy law of them all. NBC News says the rest of the country is watching closely. No other state has attempted such an ambitious privacy law, nor has, of course, Congress. But the California Attorney General, who is responsible for implementing the law, is a little afraid. He says he may not have enough staff to carry out the job. The law could collapse under its own weight. He's worried that the law bites off more than his department can chew. So this should be fun.
I mean, he's going to need a whole department just for Zuckerberg.
We're going to need a bigger boat. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is exactly why you hear every single CEO, Facebook, Apple, everybody saying that we've been trying to open a, we feel that privacy and security is important. Yeah. And that's why we want to work with the federal government, whom we can all, we're already spending lots of lobbying money for, and we already know we can control, rather than negotiate with 50 individual states, some of which are not willing to do things just because we ask them and be really mean to them and give them lots of money. So yeah, this there is a need for a formal bill of rights for consumer privacy, but we're gonna have to. We really are gonna have to feel our way around these laws. We're gonna have to have a whole bunch of bad laws that show us how off the rails this can go before we figure out what we need to implement and what we need to sort of give up on just to make sure that the wheels can continue to turn.
I don't think we have to worry. Mark Zuckerberg said the future's private. Case closed.
There you go.
Case closed.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. Yeah.
Privacy on stage this year. I think we said this last week. Privacy on stage this year was AI 3 years ago and the cloud 10 years ago. It's just it's whatever buzzword we need at
it's
this
blockchain,
point.
It's blockchain, baby. Yeah. And here it comes. Yeah. So in the annals of dopey hacking, just down the road a piece, the chief financial officer of a California school lunch company, Choice Lunch, was arrested last month. Because he was charged with illegally hacking Lunchmaster, his competitor, to find out, and this is what he wanted to know, what kids across the San Francisco Bay Area like to eat and what they are allergic to. He's been charged with unlawful computer access and fraud, and if found guilty, faces up to 3 years behind bars eating food that will almost certainly be worse than the food in California schools.
Yeah. And oddly enough, this is what Amazon is doing legally right now by being able to observe what people are buying on Amazon, what products, what brands, and also what decisions and what decisions brought them there, what other things were they looking at, what other products had they been buying with the past 3 or 4 years. That's what fuels the expansion of Amazon's own private brands. That's they will start to get into they will develop their own or license their own noise canceling headphones only after 3 years of the most wonderfully valuable consumer data on all of their competitors' customers.
This was the Facebook thing too, right? They were figuring out what apps to buy and what apps to make based on stealing all the data from the phone that they were installed on.
Using Apple's enterprise certificates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, exactly. That's why they bought WhatsApp, because they knew that there's a lot of people who are not using Facebook Messenger. They're using WhatsApp instead. And so they decided to buy WhatsApp.
Oh, well.
God bless America.
Let's take a break. And then it'll be God bless your pick of the week. And if there's heavy metal involved, everybody will be happy. But stay tuned. We will find out. First, a word from the best way to secure yourself. You can't trust the other guys to do it. You got to do it yourself with LastPass, the password vault, the number one most preferred password manager. With LastPass, your data is encrypted everywhere except on your device. It's only decrypted on device. And by the way, every device, iOS, Android, Mac, Windows, Linux. When I set up a new system or a new phone, the first thing I put on it is LastPass, because then I know I can log in. It's easy. It auto-fills the forms. I can install the rest of my apps. I can get to all my websites. And if you're a business, you better darn well be using LastPass, because password security is the sharp point of any attack. And your employees love to share passwords. We know that. Or put them on a post-it note on the screen there. With LastPass, and we use it here, in fact, at Twit. I've used it personally for more than 10 years. And as soon as we could, we used LastPass Enterprise. You create an account with one long, secure master password. Let LastPass remember the rest. And I trust it so much, I don't just put passwords in there. Everything's in there. My passports, my driver's license. I put all my social security numbers, all my critical information. It's the safest place on my computer to store the stuff I care the most about. And LastPass is great for business because you can easily share passwords using password folders. All the people in our ops have the access to all the ops logins. All the people in the business department have access to the business department logins. But there's no sharing there. And we can even set it up so that you can log into our bank accounts without actually getting the password. So there's no way you could take it and give it to somebody else. You just click a button, it logs you in, and you're there. LastPass is for businesses of all sizes. Manage password security. Get yourself administrative oversight. You can safely and securely move to the cloud. See actionable security reports. Over 100 policies. So we set standards for what the employee's master password can be. We require two-factor authentication. By the way, LastPass makes a great authenticator. Very easy to use. One-tap password verification. Automated user management. We can revoke rights easily, create rights easily. And we control shared access. That's what you need in your business. Do not be the next big breach. LastPass is a solution for you. For individuals, LastPass Premium. At home, I use LastPass Families. That makes it easy for me to share the family passwords in a family folder. I just put the password in that folder. Lisa has access to it. She also has a very nice feature called Emergency Access, where if something should happen to me, if I become disabled, she can get access to my password vault after jumping through a few hoops. But that is absolutely critical. LastPass Families lets you keep all the family passwords organized, secure, at your fingertips. We have medical accounts in there, credit cards, entertainment, everything organized into folders by family member or type of account. And that digital contingency plan, emergency access, is a lifesaver. LastPass for teams, if you have a small company, 50 or fewer. And then the big boy, we use it, LastPass Enterprise. LastPass is the way to protect yourself. Try it today. Join over 13.5 million people who have signed up for LastPass, are loving it and trusting it. I trust it 100%. LastPass.com/twit. Find out how they can help you. There's a LastPass for you at LastPass.com/twit. I thank them so much for their support and for keeping us secure. Jim Dalrymple, rock and roll. Your pick of the week.
All right. So I'll explain to you the band that I pick, the reason that I picked them. But the band that I wanted to highlight this week is AC/DC. The reason that I wanted to pick AC/DC this week, even though they're such an old band, I started listening to a lot of the old AC/DC again. Yeah. And I realized just how good it was.
Lisa is going through a Bon Scott phase right now, and it's just awesome.
Oh, it is just so incredible to hear a lot of that old stuff. Now, we can even say that Back in Black is old stuff. Back in Black came out in 1980. It was the Brian Johnson, his first album with AC/DC, but that was still a long time ago. So when you start listening to the old Bon Scott days, you know, from the mid 70s up to 1980, the music is just so incredible that I know that a lot of people listening know who AC/DC is, and they say, oh yeah, go back and listen. I went back and started listening and was just blown away all over again at the albums and the music in those songs and those albums. So
it's hard to believe.
Do yourself a favor, go back and do it.
He's been gone since 1980. That's just, God, it's hard to
believe. He died in 79. It's
almost 50 years. It's amazing, you know?
Crazy.
Yep. Well, I couldn't agree more. And in fact, we're watching Billions on Showtime and there's a big boxing match, And Lisa said, they're going to play TNT. And they did.
There you go.
They did. It was, she was like, it was uncanny. She was channeling the TV show. She said, this is an AC/DC moment for sure. She actually wanted a Bon Scott song, but that's okay. It was still great. Hey, thank you so much. What a great pick. Jim Dalrymple, loopinsight.com. Do not fear this beard. He is a pussycat. J. Dalrymple on the Twitter. It's so great to have you. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks a lot, Leo. I really appreciate it.
We love having you on. Your pick of the week, Mr. Nutco.
We were talking about web apps at the top of the show, and I just decided to recommend a really cool web-based image editor called PEA. And it really is like Photoshop of, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, but entirely done as a web app. So it'll run on your phone. It'll run on your iPad. It'll run on your desktop. It supports layers. It supports tools. It'll support RAW. It'll import, export PSDs. It's really, and we'll also work with the Apple Pencil. It's it also supports vectors, supports text. It's surprisingly good. And the only thing that's kind of better than a really good $5 app on the App Store is something where you just bookmark it in your browser in Safari, and it's synced to every device you have. The bookmark synced to every device that you have. And when you suddenly realize that, oh, I really need to just change the aspect ratio of this, or change, someone sent me something as a PSD, I need it as a JPEG, to be able to just open it up in your web browser, make the fixes that you need to do, make even some kind of sophisticated fixes like adding gradients and things like that, and then be able to export it back into the camera roll is pretty darn nice. It also will work with the standard with the Files app, so if you can, it can, you can open documents or RAWs or whatever from Dropbox. You can open files from URLs. You can open things from the camera roll. And then when you're done, when you do a save as, you choose the format, the size, everything you want to do, and then it will just simply appear as a kind of like a download link, even though it's coming directly from your own device, that you can then direct to, again, the camera app, the Files app, the camera app, anything else that you want to target it at. So don't think it's going to be as responsive as or as feature filled as something you'd pay $30 for on the App Store. But once again, as something you can just simply drag into your bookmarks bar so that when you really do need something, it's right there. It's a really handy thing to have. It's supported by ads, so you might see, if you don't have an ad blocker going, you might see a little a gutter in the side that will show you an amazing offer about something that will enhance and incredibly your life. But again, it's free, so I think that's kind of okay.
There is a paid version as well, and it looks like this is a progressive web app, so you can install it. And this is an example of why I think progressive web apps are so important. Here's something you could do on an iPad or a Pixelbook, a Chromebook, without having any additional stuff installed. I think that's really impressive. Thank you. Good tip. I am not aware of this, and I will definitely be using it. Photo P as in a pod, PEA. .com. Thank you, Andy. Wow, that's impressive.
And last thing, just remember that it has been developed since 2013. It started off as a student project. So it's not as though this is something that just came from out of nowhere, or just came out of some Russian developer a year ago, right after the election. So it does have some pedigree to it.
I think there's a lot. I mean, this has layers. It reads and writes PSD files, Photoshop files. This is impressive as heck.
Background removal. It's pretty darn good.
Wow. It's got Gaussian blurs. What more could you ask?
Gaussian.
Yeah.
Gaussian blurs? No. Yes. I wish somebody would do a Lightroom like this. That would be very cool.
Yeah. Again, it's such a great idea. There's people don't understand exactly how good something that just uses web technology, that uses the web as a software platform, can be. And it's just not taken advantage of. I think possibly because app developers can get so much more information off the device as a regular app, as well as do make it more responsive and take advantage of more features. But I really think that this should be a web platform in and of itself.
I'm going to take a picture of myself inside the app, create a new project, and then edit it. Let's get the bags out from under my eyes right away. Photo P. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So I'm going to make up for the lack of Alex by trying to pick something as close to a couple Alexes as possible.
Nice.
So he's with us in spirit still. So I haven't owned a robot. I always love these little home robots, and I haven't owned a Roomba in many, many years. I was waiting for HomeKit support because I just want to say, Yojimbo, clean this and that. But it does support Alexa, does support Google Assistant, does not support HomeKit yet. But if you are brilliant like Federico Vitici, you can put up a web page that tells you how to use if this, then that to create Siri shortcuts that control it. So where there is a will and a Federico, there is a way. But this is basically what I've been looking for a while, because I've had the old Roombas and you'd run it and then it would stop and you'd have to clean it out. But this is like the mother of all Roombas. This is like the Hulkbuster armor of Roombas. This is the Roomba that Roombas go to. So it basically does everything that a Roomba does, but it then docks with this tower that then offloads the local amount of dirt and dust and debris into a vast tower of dirt and dust and debris, meaning that the human only really has to intervene every several weeks instead of every time you use it. And it sounds like this is like the height of laziness. Yeah, it sounds like it's the height of laziness. And it's like, oh, you're not even vacuuming. You can't even bother to empty the vacuum. But once you don't have to vacuum, you sort of don't want to have to empty the vacuum. And this will let you go several weeks. You can also target specific rooms. It's very good for different surfaces. And I have the studio floor now where it's all hardwoods, and it gets, I don't know where the dust comes from. I think there must be just dust, spontaneously erupting all over the place. But my goal is just to let this thing run and then as little as possible maintain it and see if I really have a robotic future.
$1,000.
Yeah. Again, it's the Alex, it's a double Alex Lindsay of Roombas.
Wow.
But.
But I agree with you, Renee. There's the demographic of people like me who doesn't want to vacuum also doesn't want to have to empty out the dustpan. If I can just throw $1,000 at the problem where I can just, and anytime someone complains about my dirty house, like, oh, that darn Roomba.
You know, I forgot to cover the new Apple TV app. Is there anything we should have mentioned in there? I guess
I did a video on it. It is both amazing. Let me back up for a second. There is no Apple Music for video yet. Like, you can't just go to one service and get everything, or like several services. There's no Apple Music, Spotify, whatever. There's still a bunch of different fiefdoms that have exclusive content that expect you to get separate and manage separate subscriptions for each of those. And nobody, including Apple, can change that. So what Apple's doing is kind of creating a unified view where, even though there are all these services in the background, they will give you this presentation layer that not just links to different apps, but actually plays the content within the TV app. There are some holdouts like Netflix who don't want anything to do with this, but in the US at least, you have HBO involved in this, you have several others. It varies a lot by region because, like in Canada, the CRTC offers minimal protection, so Bell and Rogers locked up the rights to everything very quickly. But in some places, there's going to be a bunch of different apps that you can get free trials of with one click, subscribe to. All that stuff will show up for you in like the What's Up Next column. It'll have editor recommendations, machine learned recommendations, and this really nice new interface where you don't have to browse, click in, click out, browse, but just go in, swipe across, play trailers inside the little thumbnails. It doesn't fix the problem, because nobody can fix the problem of actually making one service with almost every amount of video content. But I think it comes really close to solving a lot of the user-facing problems of just managing all of this. These different fiefdoms.
So you now have homework, boys and girls. Go and download, update all of your devices. There's a new iOS, there's new watchOS, there's new tvOS updates.
New Pride 2019 face in watchOS.
Oh, yeah, really nice. Yep.
Yeah.
We're going to be getting a new band, hopefully.
Yeah, I think, well, they have a Pride band from last year. Are they going to do a new one?
They did one 2 years ago, another one last year. And
Yeah.
No, but isn't it annual? Didn't they have a different one last year?
Oh, okay. I think so. And Apple Internal got a band with a little Pride thing on it when they finished their fitness challenge, which
that's
I'm
right.
lusting
yeah.
after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Complete your collection. Collect all 800 bands.
Yes.
So your homework is download and update all the stuff, including Mac OS. That's an important one. Yeah. And then go to imore.com and read up on the new Apple TV app. Renee's got a video and images, all you'd ever want to know about the Apple TV app.
The problem is they tell me stuff, Leo, and then I feel like I have to explain all of it, and then it's never ending.
It gets like to be a very long. But you know what? It's the good news about it. Everything is in here. The only article you need to read.
You can even the small confusing part is like if you already subscribe to HBO or you get it through your provider or HBO Now, it works differently than if you subscribe to HBO within the TV app, which then gives you full integration, lets you download episodes and do all these extra things because the world is still confusing and awful. But it's slowly getting better.
Sigh. It's not Apple's fault, that's for sure. It's all these silos that we have to live with.
They don't want to be the music industry. They don't care about us too much.
Renee Ritchie is at iMore.com. Vector is at iMore.com/Vector. You must live there from now on. There he is. Good looking fella. Please. We'll come back again and see you next week. But in the meantime, Vector will be there for you. Thank you, Renee. Andy Iannacco, Boston Public Radio, WGBH. When are you going to be on?
Monday at 11:30 at WGBH in Boston, WGBHnews.org. You might want to tune in early because John Waters is going to be in studio a half hour beforehand, which means that I'm going to be there 45 minutes beforehand going, Mr. Waters, I just want you to know that Serial Mom is one of my favorite episodes. And I might be a little flushed when I'm actually on after meeting. Nice. And I might have grown a little pencil mustache just in honor of the man.
Have fun. And of course, Jim Dalrymple, loopinsight.com. Go tend to the dog and the wood chipper. not in that order.
Sorry about that.
No. It's worth it. Anything to have you on. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you all for watching. We do Mac Break Weekly Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific. That'd be about 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC. You can watch or listen live at twit.tv/live. If you do that, chat with us too. All the other live viewers are in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. You can also get on-demand versions of everything we do here. Just go to twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/MBW, and download a copy or subscribe. There's buttons there, but you can also subscribe in any podcast application. Search for Mac Break Weekly. I hope Lori Gill is having a wonderful time with her mom today in Disneyland.
Oh, so good. I saw the Instagrams.
Is
so
she
good.
Going to the Star Wars? Because Star Wars, it's not open yet. It's open in May.
No.
Later.
Yeah, she's avoiding the rush.
Yeah, we wanted to go, but it's apparently booked for the next 5 years. So anyway, have fun, Lori. We'll see you next week. And thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time. But now it's time to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.